Back here on Preds Extra, ESPN 102.5, The Game, Chase McCabe alongside Justin B. Bradford from Penalty Box Radio every Wednesday at 8 o'clock here on The Game Nashville. Pre-game coming up at 7:30 with Darren McFarland. The puck drop just after 8:30 with Pete Weber and Hal Gill. And we say hello to Nick Kale from Morning Drive, a guy I haven't seen in about a week. Because I've been traveling in Winnipeg, but
yeah, how's your vacation been going?
It's been great. You know, Winnipeg, a beautiful place in Canada, lots to do.
You got Tim Hortons, right?
Tim Hortons. That was my first stop, and I thought of you when I went and got that. Got some Timbits.
Yep. My boy.
So, I asked a question before the break, and I was listening to Jared and Floyd yesterday, and Jared and the GM, and Jared posed the question, or really his theory that PK Subban had to be the MVP. The remainder of the way. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Pecorine is always the MVP. He's always the most important player. But he got me thinking, which is scary, but he got me thinking because I think he's right. You look at how PK Subban has played in this series, and I think it has dictated a lot of how the games have gone. You know, when he's taking a ton of penalties and making, you know, not smart decisions, it tends to affect the Predators. We saw it even in his best game. Game 4 to me was his best game, and he had that penalty late in the game, and it cost him a goal there on the power play. And he was the first person to call himself out for that. It just shows you how important of a player he is, not only offensively, but defensively as well. So what do you guys think? Does he have to be the MVP the remainder of the way?
I mean, I don't know if he has to be the MVP, but he can't be making stupid decisions. You can't be getting penalties at inopportune times, and you really have to just be a positive factor. I mean, we talked about this on the morning show for a couple of days going into that series that, and I had said this specifically, if he is not one of the stars that we are talking about at the end of this series from a positive standpoint, I don't know that they actually win this series. So I don't know if he has to necessarily be the MVP, but he can't be a liability. He can't make stupid penalties, and he can't be MIA. He can't go 2, 3, 4 games in a row where he's not a factor. I don't know if he has to be the MVP, though.
So here's my thought. This team is not built to have an MVP. This team is built to play as a team. This team is built to where, if anything, you want to say who has to be the best players, the top four defense need to be their best. Because when they're doing well, the entire team's doing well. They're scoring, and they're stopping. That's what you thought through the regular season when Ryan Ellis came back, that they're scoring, they're producing offensively, and they're shutting teams down defensively. You protect the slot, you protect, like I said in Wednesday night, save the goaltender, save the world. That's what I'm sticking with, because this team, the way they built it with depth and everything, it's not built where one player has to carry them through the playoffs. We've already seen it. The third line blew it up in round one. They're not doing it right now in round two because another line is going to produce. But that's how it's built, to where you go in waves. With this team, it's waves. The depth means everything for this team. And as long as the team itself is playing well, the team's going to win. But it's a team game. And so I'll keep on saying it's not up to one player to carry them through the playoffs.
Well, and I think that just to build off your point, that's why David Poile built this thing the way he did this depth. Because then Peter Laviolette, he can mix and match. If, you know, let's say the Jofa line is working, which they pretty much have been throughout the playoffs, you leave that alone. Second line, okay, they've had their struggles. You tweak it a little bit. You try in game number 4, having Scott Hartnell in there for Kevin Fiala. That, in my opinion, worked maybe in a different way. It wasn't offensively, but it was working because I thought he did such a good job with Dustin Byfuglien. And if you look at morning skate today, it looks like Hartnell is out. Fiala will go back in. But we'll find out here in a little bit once they get on the ice for warm-ups if that is, in fact, going to be true, or if Peter Laviolette is once again playing a poker game, as he's been known to do. But you're right, because I think that's the best part about this team is you can have one line working when one needs some help. Same goes for the defensive pairings. Look, I think everybody would agree that Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis have another level that they need to get to. Mm-hmm. But PK Subban and Matthias Ekholm, I think, have carried the defense, and they've done a pretty good job at it. PK Subban can be the best defenseman in the league. Now, he also has an offensive game. There's also a mind game that he has been known to play since he's gotten into this league. He's a Norris finalist for a reason. But right now, I think he has been one of the most important players.
Yeah, there's strength in numbers. And I think this is, and you, Justin, you nailed it. There doesn't need to be one star. The star of this team, beyond Pekka, maybe even beyond Lavi, being as accomplished of a coach as he is the strength in numbers, whether it's the four guys on the blue line, whether it's the Jofa line collectively, and then individuals at times. We've seen Austin Watson step up. You know, Fiala can score. Obviously, he'll be back on the second line tonight. So it's really a collection of guys as opposed to a Colorado that's just Nathan MacKinnon or just a team like with a player with a team on like, you know, Connor McDavid. So it's not just one guy, and that's what makes this team so balanced and so dangerous.
Absolutely. And it's not just the Nashville Predators. You're seeing this towards the NHL as well. Winnipeg has depth. That's why they match up so well, too, because Winnipeg has their depth because you haven't had Patrick Laine leading their team. It's one goal. So their depth as well is what's been challenging to the Nashville Predators because you have their bottom six getting involved as well. You have their defense getting involved. That's why it makes it such an intriguing series because their defense can score as well. But, yes, again, it goes right up to the Nashville Predators, any of the four lines. We're Ryan Hartman, Mike Fischer. Those guys can score, too. Mika Salamaki does his job on the forecheck. So when you have a fourth line that can put a puck in the back of the net, it makes you an extremely dangerous team.
Chase McCabe, Justin Bradford, Nick Cale here with you on Preds Extra. Pregame coming up in a little over an hour on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You brought up Patrick Laine and how he hasn't really been much of a factor in this series. Not like we think he could be.
Goals-wise.
But the Predators have done a good job of taking, you know, the big stars out of it. Like, we saw that with Nathan MacKinnon in the first round. Now, look, they're going to show up. They're going to score goals at times. But I thought, for the most part, they did a pretty good job containing him. And I think, in my opinion, that's just because of the way that core four and even the defensive forwards, how they're built with this team and with what Peter Laviolette has put in system-wise as head coach.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense, too. You want to eliminate or at least try to contain and control some of the stars, and it's no different in any other sport. You go across different, you know, the NBA or Major League Baseball, a killer power hitter or a stud receiver, and it's almost Belichickian in a way, is that the Preds and Laviolette, they find a way to kind of contain and control those elite players. And speaking of Belichickian, I think what he's doing tonight by taking Hartnell back out, putting Fiala back in, is kind of Bill Belichick-esque. Like, you know, one week he'll use tight ends and fullbacks, and next week he goes five wide and spreads it out. He brings in Hartnell previous game, puts him on the second line. They play a physical brand of hockey, and you know what Scott Hartnell has always been about, especially at this point in his career. And now you come back home 2-2, you put the offensive guy back in, the skilled player, the speed player, and you try to get out to a lead tonight. It's Bill Belichickian.
That's a good analogy.
Thank you. Yeah. I was working good on that all day.
Yeah?
Laviolette's not wearing the hoodie with the cutoffs.
No, it's not. Too cold down there.
Yeah. Too cold. But I will say, and Nick, you know, I was on a plane, so I didn't get to hear you yesterday morning.
No, look at him bragging about on a plane.
Talking about, you know, the game, game four, but the coaching job that Peter Laviolette did, I thought was one of the best, if not the best, of the playoffs from him. And we've seen some gems out of him. But what he did, not only with the lineup, but just managing the game, I thought you should definitely be commended.
Yeah, and I think at this point we are now, because everybody loves to run to social media and say, oh, I don't understand why you're doing that, or I vehemently disagree. More often than not, this guy pushes the right button. He's not 100% every time, but, I mean, he's earned the right throughout his career, throughout his time in Nashville, especially over the last 2 years, that when he makes a decision, I don't know, 4 out of 5 times, it seems like it pans out.
Yeah,
And when he takes out his gum, watch out. Because nice words are not coming out of his mouth when the gum comes out.
Well, and it's like, I think he's doing it again today. You know, people are going, well, okay, wait. Kevin Fiala's going back in? Like, you're taking Scott Hartnell out? What are you doing? Like, it worked. You won the game. Why would you make a change? Why would you do that?
Matchups.
You know, and he's asked about it in the press conference this morning and basically gives you the standard, you know, I don't want to discuss lineups. You know, it's my decision. This is what I'm doing. But most of the time, it seems to work. You had a great theory earlier about why he's doing that.
Thanks.
Why don't you repeat that for our studio audience that is here in the Jack Daniels Barrel House.
Hi, studio audience.
and Nick Cale.
I think it was save it. You got to save it. Your voices need to be hoarse at the end of the game.
They could cheer for you. It's okay.
Okay, come on. Didn't you see Carrie Underwood's tweet this morning? Get ready. Get that voice ready for Smash.
There you go.
You're going to be lit tonight. You know, my theory is about Kevin Fiala, and like you're saying about making those adjustments, that this team, they're making adjustments in the right way. When you're at home, You have the last change. Therefore, you can quote-unquote protect Kevin Fiala a little bit more with who you're putting him out against, especially on a faceoff. You're putting him in the offensive zone. You're putting him out there against who you want to put him out against. He doesn't have to be quote-unquote necessarily defensively responsible near as much. Whereas Scott Hartnell, you know what you're going to get out of him. You can put him out there because he can be physical. He can shut down Dustin Byfuglien, or at least keep him in check way more up in Winnipeg. But here, you can put an offensive weapon out there because of the matchups. I think it really comes down to that coaching matchup decision, because you can put him out there against a line that won't have as near good of an ability to shut him down and allows him to flourish hopefully a little bit more.
I also think too, and you guys want to get your thoughts on this, does this signify that he expects and anticipates a high-scoring affair tonight? Because for the most part, when these two teams have met, whether it's in the postseason or the regular season, it's 6-5, it's 5-4. Last game was 2-1. And even with the great goaltenders in this matchup, does that mean we're in store for, and he anticipates, another 5-4 type game?
Could be. I said earlier that, you know, I hope that they stay that type of game that we saw in game 4, because I think the Predators have the advantage play a defensive type game. 2-1, you know, Pecorine faced 33 shots. He stopped 32 of them. I think when he gets a lot of work, you know, he's better seeing the puck. But it could be right. You know, you're putting in a fast guy, a guy that is a known goal scorer. He's trying to, you know, light a fire up under Kevin Fiala. Maybe sitting him a game will do that. But I wouldn't be surprised, because I thought that the Predators did such a good job of controlling the pace of the game in game number 4 in Winnipeg that the Jets have probably studied that, and they're going to try and throw them off of that because they know how successful the Preds can be with it.
But I would also say this too, if they get the same defensive effort they got in game 4 and the same execution in keeping Winnipeg off their game offensively with the environment the way it's going to be around 8:40 tonight when that puck drops, it wouldn't surprise me if we get a 4-1 Preds win and it's just sheer and utter domination. And I'm not trying to play up to the home crowd, but if they get that kind of effort, watch out.
Well, especially when you add another offensive weapon like Kevin Fiala, and if they can get the power play, can, you know, advancing and scoring goals, Kevin Fiala on the power play. Again, you put him out in situations where you expect him to score, and he can. I mean, hey, double overtime winner. He can go and do that, and especially when, like we said before, round one he struggled. He knew it. He's getting called out. He was seeing what people were saying about his struggles in round one. He comes out and responds, goal in game 1, a goal in game 2 to win the game. He's the type of player that you're already seeing at the maturity level in there that he can respond when he's expected to respond.
Nick Kale from Morning Drive joining Justin Bradford and Chase McCabe here at the Jack Daniels Barrel House. You can listen to Nick Braden and Derek Mason every Monday through Friday from 6 till 10 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick, are you sticking around? You want to stick around for another segment?
Or yeah, we'll stick around. No, we'll talk hockey, watch the Kentucky Derby a little bit, and do five other things at once. The Penguins are already underway, big game 5, so I can multitask.
All right, good, because I want to get your thoughts on I don't know if they're listening. The fans here at Bridgestone Arena, because there's one Winnipeg Jet player that, you know, discounts them a little bit.
Dun, dun, dun.
We'll see how they feel about it when we come back on Preds Extra, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Don't that feel real funky, y'all?
Preds Extra live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Justin B. Bradford from Penalty Box Radio, and Nick Kale from Morning Drive. Weekday 6 to 10 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I am Chase McCabe, and we are rocking and rolling, getting ready for game number 5 tonight, Preds and the Jets. Now, I think the three of us will probably agree, and we don't always agree on everything, but I think we will on this. This place on Cinco de Mayo in game 5 with the Preds having a chance to go up 3-2 in the series is going to be, as the kids say, hashtag lit.
Hashtag lit. Hype. Off the chain. It's going to be loud, loud,
loud,
in here. Loud,
loud.
It's going to
be very loud.
Loud.
We have fans already in the Jack Daniels Barrel House, and I think they are going to bring it tonight along with everyone else once the doors get open. But Blake Wheeler of the Winnipeg Jets, after they won game 3, had some pretty strong comments that I think Predators fans have used as bulletin board material.
I mean, our fans are huge. It's real, too. You know, our crowd noise is from our crowd. It's not from speakers or from music or for live bands or whatever. That's people making noise, and that goes right through your body. And when they're cheering for you and our team gets rolling downhill like that, you know, it creates a ton of momentum for us. We've fed off it even in the regular season, but, you know, you get that crowd going like that in the playoffs, and I think every single guy gets a little extra jump in their step.
Blake Wheeler, captain of the Winnipeg Jets, after game 3, talking about the fans and saying that they're real in Winnipeg. Now, having just attended two games in Winnipeg at the Bell MTS Place. I will say that it is a great atmosphere.
Sure.
It is loud.
Sure.
But to say that it's real and then diss on the band stage and the speakers and things like that, I mean, I think that was completely unnecessary. I put this out on Twitter that, you know, I don't think it has to be a contest of which fan base is loud. Because, you know, you can look at different factors. It's a smaller arena in Winnipeg. You know, that's going to play in. You know, here we have the Nashville factor and that you're going to have Carrie Underwood or whoever else showing up to sing the anthem or be on the band stage. Look, it doesn't matter. The fact is, these are two of the loudest fan bases in the National Hockey League, and I think that is awesome for this series and for the league. I don't know why he had to go and just stir it up like that. I mean, I'm sure he was calculated in doing that, but all you're doing is giving all of them fuel for tonight.
Oh, is that what the C stands for on his shirt? Calculated?
Calculated.
I thought it might have been captain, because it doesn't sound like a captain-type comment when you say something that's just factually incorrect. Because, yeah, while the band stage is a factor, it's a factor during intermission. It's not a factor during the game, Mr. Wheeler. So is it a Canadian-type environment? No, but I think Braden has said it best. It's SEC football meets, you know, a European soccer event, and that's the charm behind Bridgestone. That's the energy and the intensity, and that's what makes it unique and special.
Can we get a mic for Nick to drop?
These things are too expensive.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, don't do that.
Let's get a fake
mic. It's not coming out of my check.
The thing that gets me is, well, first of all, you know, if you're coming to this game, it's an 8:30 start. Folks, the team feeds off of it when you are in your seats and cheering for warm-ups. Right. I know in the regular season there's usually, you know, spattering of fans in there for warm-ups, but remember last season, remember game one, what it was like in this arena when you're chanting the team during warm-ups. They feed off that energy. Do it. If you're coming to this game, be there for warm-ups and cheer them on. They feed off it. You want the team to start feeding off of you before the game even starts. Start cheering them on during warm-ups. Be in your seats and cheer them on. That right there sets the energy, and that right there will show Winnipeg what it's about, too, is that if you're cheering them on that late and get the atmosphere rocking before it's even going live on TV, it's really going to show a lot of people what it's all about here.
Look, there are some teams in the league, and, you know, we won't mention names, Florida Panthers, but that, you know, have nobody show up at their games, and so they don't know what that's like. And, you know, for the Predators to fight as hard as they did to win the President's Trophy, to have home ice advantage throughout, that's exactly why, because that energy that the fans create, you mentioned it in warm-ups, I mean, that's why you fight for something like that. I'm not faulting, you know, the Winnipeg Jets and their, or,
no.
You know, I'm not blaming their fan base for anything, because they're awesome. I mean, I was just there. They – when O Canada is sung, they take over. And the anthem singer stops singing, and it's a really, really cool thing. But that's them. They do them. And you come here to Smashville, and these fans, you know, they definitely take over. And that's what makes – that's one of the many things that I think has made this series so much fun.
This is what gets me. Usually you're going to have, you know, quasi-media attacking a fan base, like,
right.
You know, a weatherman in Pittsburgh. But you're not going to have the captain of another team attacking a fan base. That's just bad news bears, Walter Matthau. You know, when you're trying to do that, is that when you're attacking a fan base as a player, that just seems kind of uncalled for. And, yeah, it's bulletin board material, all this. It's just one of those things of why. Because you know what he's insinuating. He was talking directly about Nashville with everything that he's talking about there, too. Why don't you just hype up your fans? You have a great fan base. You have fans that are all over your arena outside filling up their streets. Hype them up even more. Why do you have to attack another fan base just to make your fans feel better? You don't have to do that.
I mean, it makes for good sports radio fodder.
Oh, yeah.
Like what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
But if you are a team that's got 114 points and a team that's got 117 points, and it's really best on best, and we've talked, a lot of people have said, this is really the Western Conference Finals for the most part. You know, you don't really need to give any extra motivation or incentive, because these two teams are so good, it should be just left right where it's at.
And look, we know Game Ops here. Game Ops does not miss a chance at anything.
No.
I would not be surprised at all if Blake Wheeler's comments are not brought up at some point during the game tonight, because, you know, that's what makes Game Ops here so great, because they do capitalize on those opportunities to give the fans even more of a reason to scream their head off. Oh, and not to mention, it's Cinco de Mayo. It's an 8:30 start, and, you know, you're going to have a few margaritas in. You know, fans are going to be a few shots of tequila or whatever else in when they get here.
Should be a very toasty environment.
Yeah.
Toasty.
I would say so.
Toasted.
So, Nick, before we let you go, go get some cotton candy and whatever else you're going to do to get ready for the game, just some quick thoughts on Game 5 tonight. The Predators, in my opinion, can take this series, take the momentum by winning two games in a row, which they're going to have to do at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say and use a cliche, but it's going to have to be 60 full minutes because we've seen them get out to a 3-0 lead and it didn't result in a victory. So literally has to be every second of the entire 60 minutes tonight. I would expect Pekka to be almost as good as he was two nights ago. And I think, again, if PK Subban is having those moments offensively where he is firing in a few blasts, could be a tough night for Connor Hellebuyck. But again, like it was in game one, you know, if they can get close to 40, 45 shots, but more high percentage shots, more in that danger zone area, could be a tough night for him. I like the Preds 3-2.
So game of the year
8.0. Yeah, and they're 7-0, by the way, in previous games. That has been dubbed game of the year.
Okay.
Not that I'm keeping track.
No, not that you're keeping track or anything. But, you know, look, you've been very honest. You've been very upfront about when you pick a game of the year and dub it that the record seems to be pretty good.
Yep.
So we will see what happens with that. We're going to bring in a goaltender because, look, the two best goalies are playing in this series. We're going to get Chris Mason's thoughts on that and much more when we come back here on Preds Extra, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds Extra here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Justin B. Bradford live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena, getting ready for game number 5 between the Preds and the Jets. Pre-game coming up at 7:30. The puck drop just after 8:30. All heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I look out into the concourse. I see a Scott Walker jersey, and I'm sure that one of his former teammates, Chris Mason, is excited to see that as well. Chris, a part of the Fox Sports Tennessee team, you'll see him on their post-game show tonight. But C. Mace, what's up?
What's up? We used to call Scotty old poodle legs. He got those short little legs flying around the ice all the time. So he's doing well, though. He's coaching.
Poodle legs.
Old poodle legs.
Wow, that's a good one. So I wanted to bring you by, you know, to get the goaltender's perspective, because we know that this series wasn't necessarily billed to be a goaltender battle just because of the offensive production from both teams. Connor Hellebuyck said it's not necessarily a fun series for a goaltender, but we saw Pekka come this close to a shutout in game number 4. I thought played his best game of maybe the playoffs, and you know, we know what Connor Hellebuyck has been able to do as well. But what is it that you think the Predators did differently in game 4 to prevent the offense from the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I think they had a full commitment to defend. I thought the first three games, like you just touched on, these are both such offensively talented teams. I thought they were just, you know, trading chances, going back and forth, and they just took on the identity of the regular season series. And to me, when you play like that, you roll the dice. When you're playing, you know, you have two juggernaut teams going toe-to-toe, flip a coin from night to night. But I thought they got back to playing, to me, in my mind, a more playoff-style, structured,
right,
full commitment to defense, and they really, I thought, got a lot of chances off the counterattack. And you know, when you hear teams, the Winnipeg Jets making comments, you don't hear players often say, hey, we ran into a brick wall in the neutral zone after the game. That's a big noticeable difference. So I thought just the full buy-in by the guys defensively was the biggest key, and I think that's the way they have to play, continue to play to win this series. So it was almost a perfect game.
Scott Hartnell came into the lineup for game number 4, and I thought, you and I exchanged some texts, I thought he played a tremendous game, and a key moment to me was early on in the first period. He and Dustin Byfuglien get tied up down in the corner, and Scott Hartnell not backing down from Buff at all. And I thought that it didn't necessarily take Byfuglien out of the game completely, but it definitely limited what we're used to seeing out of him.
Yeah, it made him, he's got something to pay attention to, and I thought right away, like you said, that was a big message sender to go out there and go after Buff and say, hey, you're going to have to deal with me tonight on a regular basis. We've seen how dominant Dustin Byfuglien can be. He's a unique player. There's really no other player in the NHL like him. So I thought that was a major contributor to setting the tone in that game.
Okay, Chris Mason joining us. If you don't know who Chris Mason is, Google him, because you should know who Chris Mason is.
CMA30 on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, Chris, Andrew Copp, you know, there's not a well-liked name here just because of what's happened. You know, the hit on Kale Yarncroke and then a little shove that he gave to Pekka Rinne. Goaltender's mindset. Is it really hard to not retaliate when something like that happens? What is going on in your mind? You're just kind of, do you flop a little bit? What is the best way to handle a situation like that when a player like Andrew Cobb gets in your face?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm not trying to, you know, whatever, brag or anything, but I would never flop. I've never, if you can find video of it, I hope. And same for Pecorine. Mm-hmm. He will never be that guy that gets bumped into and throws himself back. That's just not in his DNA. He's got too much respect for the game. Mm-hmm. You know, the only thing in that situation you can do is hopefully either, you know, make the referee aware of it. And I think they did talk to Kopp after that incident. There was two of them in that game. But at the end of the day, he's just trying to do what he can do to try to get Peck off his game, because like Chase said, it was by far Pekka's best game, and that was you know, a tactic you try to use, or players try to use, to try to get in your head a little bit. But that's the referee's responsibility to control that if that becomes a thing.
No, it absolutely isn't. And looking at Pecorine, and there's so many things that people are still trying to learn just about positions and things like that. Pecorine, and most people do know that he's one of the best at playing the puck outside of the crease. Obviously, some people freak out and they get a little nervous when he's playing the puck, but how unique of a skill is that for Pecorine to have such a great ability to be mobile out there to get that first pass off on the break?
Well, I was horrible at playing the puck, but what it does is it makes your defenseman play different. It's hard to forecheck when you have a goalie like Pekka, or, you know, Mike Smith are the top two in the league, in my opinion. It's really tough to get a proper forecheck, because the D-man just fan out to the corners, and he's so good at controlling it and getting into that position right away. You know, for a forechecker, you have to make the decision whether you're going to go right at the goalie, but as soon as you do, you're giving up that easy pass, and it helps you come out of the zone so much more effectively. It's such a such a big chip to have back there, and such an advantage, I think, when you have a goaltender that can handle it as well as Pekka.
Chris Mason is our guest here on Preds Extra. You can follow him on Twitter at CMace30, and also catch him on the Fox Sports Tennessee postgame show following Game 5 tonight. So, Chris, we shift gears to Connor Hellebuyck, and the Predators got 48 shots on him in game number one, could only score one goal, but as the series has gone on, I do feel like they've done a better job of figuring him out. What have you seen out of Connor Hellebuyck that makes it so tough for the Predators, but also some flaws that he has that they've been able to exploit?
Well, I think, you know, you can't take anything away from Hellebuyck, no question. But when I look back at this series, and tell me if you guys can remember, I can't remember any big game-breaking saves that he's made or that he's had to make. And that's, I think, a testament to the way that they defend. They do a really good job in front of him. He's a big guy. He takes away that lower portion of the net. He's really improved his hands this year. He used to be able to exploit him up top. He's really worked on that the last couple years, and he's become a lot better at that, which has got him into that elite category. But I think we see some of the goals, and this is the same for any goaltender in the league. Whatever you want to break down a guy's weakness, this or that, you got to get in front of him. Victor Arvidsson in front of the net. How many goals? 3 jump screens or whatever he does. You have to do that, because even if the goalie saves it, even if the goalie saves it on a screenshot, he's not aware. It takes him an extra half second to find that rebound, and you get into scramble mode. If you don't have that traffic, it's so easy for an NHL goaltender, especially an elite goaltender, to control what happens after the shot. So I think they have to keep fighting, finding ways to get to that net. It's easier said than done. I don't think they did the best job games 1 and 2, but I thought they did a lot better job up in Winnipeg.
Chris, we talked about the Scott Hartnell and being in game number 4 a little bit earlier, but if you look at morning skate and the projected lineup tonight, it would appear that Kevin Fiala is going to go back in for Scott Hartnell on that second line. Now, Justin had a theory earlier that a lot of that has to do with matchups and being at home in the last change, and Peter Laviolette, you know, being such the poker player that he is, that the advantage could be to the Predators to have a little more speed, a little more skill with Kevin Fiala in the lineup tonight. What do you think about the possible change that we're going to see with Fiala back in?
Look, these are tough decisions. You know, Peter Laviolette's got guys every night that he's sitting out that are very capable of making impacts. Scott Hartnell's been dying to get in the lineup. You could see that. He came out. I thought he was big time impactful in that game 4. So to take him out, that's a really tough decision. But you have a guy like Kevin Fiala, had a great year. He's got that game breaker type of skill set that, you know, he can score those goals, those big individual plays. You know, he's got more offensive upside in that category. But Justin made a great point. That's Peter Laviolette is the king of matchups, situational matchups. You can kind of dictate when he's on the ice, who he's on the ice against. And so it'll allow him to have a better chance of being successful. So, you know, either way you go, I love Scotty Hartnell. I love Kevin Fiala, but it's a tough decision. And, you know, if he comes in and plays a good game, Peter will look like a genius. And I know Kevin will be ready. He's owned his shortcomings. He's had some good moments, but he hasn't been good enough, so he'll have to be really good tonight.
All right, Chris, Barrel House is filling up more and more, and got to ask a question about the fans. And it's usually one of your keys about being loud, because the team does feed off the energy so much here. And then we talk about the Blake Wheeler comments. We've talked about all these different things. But in terms of this crowd being active and involved, how important is it for them just to be there early, to be in their seats, to cheer on, to be supportive of the team? Because sometimes the team goes down 1-0, 2-0, and this crowd has been so great about still continuing to cheer on the team, where some other fan bases don't do that. They get quiet, but the Predators fans seem to be able to get them back into it sometimes.
You know, honestly, fans will always ask when I used to play, and even now they ask, does it really make a difference if we're cheering and loud and you guys hear, and does it make a difference? And the answer, yes, it does. It makes a huge difference. And the one thing about the Predators fans, like you said, that's really unique to them, is they pick the guys up. You know, after, you know, there's a couple bad shifts or the other team scores a couple quick goals, they try to lift the guys back up by showing support instead of getting on them or, you know, booing or just really getting quiet. You know, the cell block is they're so good at you know, starting that off. And as soon as a couple fans make noise, everybody gets behind it. And it's such a big boost and a mental lift. It just really energizes a team, and it's just such a special fan base in that regard. I just really think there's such an awesome connection between this team and its fans.
I know I've asked you this before, but since you've been on both sides, what was it like for you the first time that you were playing as an opponent and you let one in and you heard it from Selbach?
It was actually the first game I played here. I didn't let any in, so that there you go.
Fact check.
But you know, you come in this building, which is the only building I'd ever played in, and I got traded to St. Louis in the summer. And coming back, it was the most surreal feeling. And I'll tell you what, I got all the chance given to me, but I'll tell you, I respected that so much, just because you got to cheer for your team and you got to do what you got to do. But it's an intimidating place to play for opposition, no question.
Chris, thanks for dropping by. I know you have some other duties tonight, and then the post-game show coming up on Fox Sports Tennessee directly after the game. You, Lindsay, and Crispy, and Willie have been doing a fantastic job with that. And, you know, hope the bag-chucking business goes well, too.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. That's always goes well. That always goes well. That's a fail-proof business right there.
Chris Mason, give him a follow on Twitter, at CMace30.
You should be already.
Yeah, you should be already. He is Justin Bradford. I'm Chase McCabe. We have even more Preds Extra coming up. We were on until 7:30, and then we turn things over to Darren McFarland and company for the pregame show. Pete Weber, Hal Gill will have the call just after 8:30, and then another edition of Preds Extra with my man Ryan Porth, Jeremy K. Gover. They will take it home. We have Preds coverage going into Sunday, so we have you covered here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When we come back, we will chat with Luke Fox from Sportsnet. That is all next, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Preds Extra, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe alongside Justin B. Bradford of Penalty Box Radio here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're taking up until the pregame show at 7:30. We will turn things over to Darren McFarland at that time, and then the puck drop just after 8:30, all heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We say hello now to Luke Fox. He is a writer for Sportsnet up there in Canada. And, Luke, welcome in. Welcome to Nashville. I don't think this series has disappointed at all, in my opinion.
No, absolutely not. We've seen a little bit of everything. We've seen some good goaltending, some shaky goaltending, games with tons of goals. And then the last game, the Predators decided to play a more defensive style of game. So it'll be interesting to see what we get tonight, because it's so hard to predict.
I want to start with that. I said earlier on in the show that I believe the Predators take control when they play that defensive type of game. Now, you look at a guy like P.K. Subban, who I think has been the best defenseman for the Predators in these playoffs. He has an offensive game. We've seen him score 3 goals in 3 games, had the game winner the other night, but then he's making some defensive plays as well. Do you agree with that? Do you think if the Predators can try and control the pace and make it more defensive, Maybe we're not seeing these 4 and 5 goal games by either side. Do you think that benefits them?
I think absolutely. I think the last game was proof of that. It's interesting how Peter Laviolette has kind of switched tactics here. Both sides kind of started out like, let's run and gun. We're both two very skilled, very fast teams, and let's just have a track meet and see who can score more. It wasn't working out in the Preds' favor, so Laviolette really gummed up the neutral zone in the last game. When the Jets did enter the zone, it was bang it off the glass, get it out. Let's not even risk having Winnipeg cycle around the zone and generate offense that way. Let's just get it out. And there were very few high-danger chances for the Jets in last game compared to the previous three. So I think the first goal, whoever scores the first one, I mean, I know it's a bit of a cliche that that's important, but I think that'll really set the tone in this one. If the Preds score first, I could see them going back to more of a trap style and just protecting Rene and you know, forcing the Jets to kind of weave through all those landmines that they set up.
You bring up, we talk about P.K. Subban, and you have written about him quite a bit on sportsnet.ca. And the game that he plays, whether it's, you know, being an offensive or defensive or just mucking it up because, you know, he likes to chirp and to talk. And when you mention the Nashville Predators, you think of P.K. Subban. How would you evaluate his game thus far, not only in this series, but through the playoffs?
He's been excellent. There's a stat out there that he is ranks third among all defensemen in points since he came into the league in playoff scoring. So that just shows you that he elevates his game on the big stage. And it was really interesting in Winnipeg because every single time that man touched the puck, he was booed. There was a chance of Subban sucks. And, you know, that he just feeds off that. That's exactly what you don't want to do to him because he responds in a big way. Like you said, 3 goals in 3 straight games. He'll try to keep that going again. We talked to Blake Wheeler, captain of the Jets, a little bit this morning, and he said we have to be more aware of that one-timer. He's got one of the best one-timers in the league. And the fact that he can get it off from so many different angles is really impressive, you know. And even if he doesn't score, it's there for, you know, maybe Arvidsson or someone like that in the front to bang in a rebound or get a tip on it.
Yeah, that Subban flex and the windup is just something of beauty to see when that stick flexes like that. Again, Luke Fox of Sportsnet joining us here. And so we've seen both these teams obviously stock up on centers. Everybody knows how important that center depth is. Kyle Turris, the Nashville Predators, Paul Stastny with Winnipeg Jets. What are you seeing there? Because these teams are so evenly matched. Are those huge trades and why these teams are so good because of that center depth right off the bat?
I think the Paul Stastny trade was the best deal of the deadline. I think it was the best deadline pickup. He's tied for second in the team in playoff points. I think he has about 10. He's been absolutely phenomenal. And the thing about Stastny is he doesn't do it with much flash or flair. He won't really make your highlight reel, but he's such a smart player and he has such great vision. And he's a hockey nerd. This morning, all he did was want to talk about the other games, you know, the Tampa-Boston series. And, like, he's always watching hockey. He absolutely loves it. And Paul Maurice kind of paid him the ultimate compliment and said, Ron Francis, Stastny is the closest player he's ever coached next to Ron Francis, you know, Hall of Famer, one of the 100 greatest of all time. So, you know, that it's such a smart pickup for them. It's probably unlikely that they can afford to keep him after this. He's, you know, his stock is just going through the roof with his performance in this postseason.
All right, we've been asking everybody about this too, the Brad Marchand licking incident. And you and Mark Spector wrote about it, talking to different players, getting their reactions. Just what is your take on this craziness from Brad Marchand, the league having to issue an edict on it as well? And we had Carey Fraser on earlier to talk about it. This is a little weird.
It's gross. Yeah, it's disgusting. You know, kudos to Ryan Callahan because, you know, if that happened to you or I'm sure we'd be very tempted to punch the guy in the face.
Absolutely. And
he showed a lot of restraint. And that's what Marchand wants, right? He wants to draw a penalty in that scenario because I guess there's no licking rule in the rule book. But it's a bit sad. You know, this is the second time he did it. He did it to Leo Komarov in round one, and he also kissed Komarov in the regular season. I mean, he's the ultimate pest. He'll do whatever it takes. But I think it reflects poorly because I think this
the second round has been just fabulous hockey in all four series, and it's become a bit of a sideshow. And I guess the league probably didn't have grounds to suspend him right away without a warning, but, you know, he's already done it twice. It's getting a little bit ridiculous. Yeah.
Chatting with Luke Fox from Sportsnet here on Preds Extra, and a quick scoring update for you. In game number five, the Capitals lead the Penguins 2-1. In the first period, so a high-scoring first period for that game, and that leads me into that game. I asked the same question to Greg Wyshynski earlier on, and I'll pose it to you. Do you think this is the year that the Capitals can get through the Pittsburgh Penguins and advance to the Eastern Conference Final? We have seen a back-and-forth series, and right now, early on in this game, they seem to be in control on home ice. Do you think they do it?
It's hard to say. I it's so hard to bet against Sid. I thought last year was going to be the year, to be honest. They really stocked up. They got the biggest prize at the deadline in Kevin Shattenkirk. They were so deep. And they actually controlled most of the shots in that series. It was just, Fleury was outstanding. It's just so hard to bet against Sidney Crosby. The guy just finds an extra gear, finds a way. Personally, I'd like to see them do it just because, you know, I want to see what Alex Ovechkin looks like in a Stanley Cup final. You know, he's had such an illustrious career, winning the goal-scoring race at his age now. And I would just like to see, you know, a fresh team, see them get over the hump, because it's got to be devastating if you're a Capitals fan. You're just like, here we go again.
Back to this series tonight and going into game number five, it looks like that we're going to see Matthew Perrault back in the lineup for the Winnipeg Jets. Both coaches have not been afraid to jumble things up, whether it's a guy coming back from injury or, in the Predators' case, they have so much depth that Peter Laviolette is able to rotate guys in and out. Looks like Kevin Fiala will be back in for the Predators. But what do you make of the chess match between Paul Maurice and Peter Laviolette so far in this series?
I love it. I think it's a great coaches' duel. And you don't usually see teams swap out guys after a win, but both coaches have done it, and they're so tight-lipped about what they're going to do with their lineups. But Perreault's says he's felt healthy for about a week. He hasn't played since the very first game of the playoffs when Mikko Koivu leveled him with a pretty nice clean open ice hit, and I think it was a shoulder injury, probably a separated shoulder. But he's feeling good, and he'll bring a lot of energy into the lineup. You know, he was talking about watching from the press box and how it was killing him, and at some points he had to close his eyes because it was too much for him to take. He just wants to be out there. He had 17 goals this season, so it's just, you know, you talk about these teams and you keep going back to both sides' depth, so he brings another scoring threat into the game.
All right, keep it in the West, Vegas, San Jose. Vegas is one of those things everybody keeps saying, I need to stop picking against Vegas, yet people still pick against Vegas, and they keep proving people wrong with the unexpected run that they're making here. And it really, the series could almost be over if not for that goaltender interference call against them. But Vegas, shocking the hockey world this entire season.
It's a wonderful story, isn't it? I mean, we've been talking about it since October because they've been good since the very beginning.
Start.
And everyone just keeps waiting for the wheels to come off this train that they're on. I thought the Kings would have did them in, and they swept them. So I'm on board. I think they're going to beat the Sharks. I'm finally getting on board. But I do believe the winner of this Jets-Preds series is going to go to the final. And I think the Vegas run will end in the Western Conference final. It's been magical.
Hey, we're not going to complain if it's Preds and Golden Knights in the Western Conference final. That means you get Nashville and Vegas.
Yeah, but our livers are going to complain.
Yeah, you might kill about 40 reporters.
So, Luke, got to ask here, too, just from someone from an outside perspective as well, then these two fan bases that are phenomenal and loud. What has the experience been like for you, kind of seeing both different fan bases, obviously loud, and not Winnipeg's very different from some other Canadian team fan bases when you see how they're interacting with the crowd, and obviously Nashville's unique too. Just what are you noticing between these two fan bases and how unique they are?
I think they're the two loudest buildings in the NHL. This has been a treat. It's been a joy to cover this. I live in Toronto and I go to a lot of Leaf games, and I jumped back into the Leafs series for game six versus Boston, and the difference between the atmosphere that was going on in Winnipeg versus Toronto was night and day. Part of it's the building. It's a bit of a lower roof, and it kind of traps the sound, but it's all the fans. And that's the one thing I love about both these buildings is the fans don't need the Jumbotron to tell them to get loud. They just get loud because of the hockey, because they love their team. And the fact, you know, you come here and it's all yellow. You go up there and it's all white. It adds an extra element to the excitement, and just visually it looks fantastic. And I honestly do believe these are the two loudest fan bases in the league, and they're getting treated to good hockey too. The product's good, so there's reason to cheer.
Absolutely, and I have no doubt that they're going to be just as loud tonight in game number five. Hey, Luke, we appreciate you taking the time to stop by. It's good to have you on.
Thanks for inviting me. This has been fun.
Mm-hmm. Luke Fox, check out his work on sportsnet.ca, and you can read about this series and much, much more. When we come back, Justin and I will give our final thoughts on game number five, Preds and Jets. That's all next on Preds Extra, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And back here on Preds Extra, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Justin Bradford live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Jets, game number five, coming your way a little later on tonight. We will turn things over to Darren McFarland for pregame coming up in about 14 minutes or so. So we have a few minutes to break this down and give everyone the keys to victory for the Nashville Predators tonight. And the biggest one to me, Justin, is they got to do what they did in game four and stick to defense. Because a defensive game works well for the Nashville Predators.
Well, I thought the first key was score more goals.
thank you. Thank you for that.
I get it all the time on Twitter.
Can we bring Jeremy Gover in?
Hey, he had his. He's going to the bullpen. Rapper, you're out. Go sit in the dugout,
Jeremy.
Please.
Jeremy, how's it going, Gover? Chase? You can hear him on Preds Extra with Ryan Porth after the game tonight.
Oh, so that's where he'll be.
To save your question, yes, it is all about defense, Chase. This team does a really good job, and they need to perform that way. If nothing else, it leads to offense. Justin.
Hi, Gover.
Hey, how's it going?
Jeez, coming, stealing our airtime. Because he's Gover, right, and he thinks he can do that.
There's enough to go.
No, a serious key, you have to emulate what you did and then play one tick smarter. And what I mean by that is don't take a penalty at the end of the game. Because other than that, and they had plenty more opportunities to score too, it could have been bigger than just a 2-1 victory as well. It could have easily been a 4-1 or a 4-0. So emulate what you did, same defensive responsibility, but add a little extra oomph offensively to make sure you score more goals. Winnipeg has plenty of firepower. That a one-goal lead is definitely not safe. A three-goal lead is not safe.
No.
Score six or seven. It'll make a little better.
But if they do what they did in game four, and that is it wasn't just playing great defense in front of Pecorino. They controlled the neutral zone.
Absolutely did.
The Predator, the Jets would think they had an opportunity and they could break down in and get a scoring chance, and the Predators would cut them off in the neutral zone. And I thought that was one of the biggest things that led to a victory because they controlled that – possession there in the neutral zone. They weren't letting those chances develop.
Yeah, as Brian Little said, they were running into a wall.
Right.
And that wall was the neutral zone. It was Pecorino. It was everything that they could not get set up and establish constant zone time to get plenty of opportunities like they were before. And so that shows the Predators' game plan, the adjustments that Peter Laviolette made. Again, we've discussed it plenty of times in this 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
The adjustments that Peter Laviolette made going into that game. And again, Winnipeg's going to come out with their adjustments. But still, Peter Laviolette's a better coach. I think the adjustments there, they learned a lot from that game. They can come in and repeat that effort and then some, especially at home when you do have the last change.
Yeah, and I think the last change is key, and we could see some lineup changes based on what we saw at morning skate. It appears that Scott Hartnell will be out of the lineup. Kevin Fiala will be into the lineup. And, you know, I was praising the decision to put Hartnell in for game number four. I thought he did a great job of containing Dustin Byfuglien. But something that you pointed out that I thought was a very good point, and Jeremy, I'll get your thoughts on this as well, and that is that with having the last change here at Bridgestone Arena, you can play to the matchups a little bit better, and so having the speed and the skill with Kevin Fiala might benefit the Predators a little bit more tonight at home.
No, it absolutely could. And like I've said earlier in the show too, and for those of you listening here, is the Kevin Fiala, it's the matchup. You can protect him a little bit more by putting him out offensive zone starts. You put him out against a weaker unit defensively for the Winnipeg Jets to give him a better opportunity to score. That's what you have to do, because he's struggling a little bit defensively and back-checking, things like that. You give him offensive zone starts. You give him time in the power play. You give him the best opportunity to succeed offensively because you have the last change. That is the reason why I see them placing him back into the lineup, because of the last change.
I think it's interesting, right? Because what it suggests is that's how fine of a line it is between these two teams, is that, okay, on home ice, we can play Fiala. But on away ice, we're going to have your Scott Hartnell to take Bufflin out of the game to help take the crowd out of the game.
Right.
Right. That's how fine of a line. It's like, so it depends on what building it's in. It depends on the situation. Like Bradford said, it depends on who's got the first change, right? I mean, it's pretty crazy that it comes down to coaching at that level. And it's that fine line that these two teams, yes, I mean, obviously you look at on paper, the standings, you look, okay, Nashville is number one, Winnipeg number two, and they're pretty close together, right? But this is a true real-life example of how close these two teams are in a situation like this where Laviolette's trying to pull the right cards at the right times.
Well, and I've used this analogy a ton of times today on the show. It's a chess game between a chess match between Peter Laviolette and Paul Maurice, because they're two of the best at it. And both teams have a ton of depth to play with and a ton of pieces that they're going to have to pull out. You know, you look at Matthew Perreault, it looks like he's going to be back in the lineup for the Jets tonight. He's been out since game one of the Minnesota series. So the fact that both coaches have all these pieces that they can play with makes the poker game or the chess match, or however you want to put it, that much better, because we can't guess what they're going to do game in and game out.
And that's where I give the edge to Peter Laviolette, because of his experience, because of how successful he is, and because of the home ice advantage. The best of three now, the advantage goes to the Predators, obviously, just because of the home ice advantage, but because of that last change, because it is such a fine line, a 2-1 game. If you're having to win 2-1, that last change could make a huge difference of who you're starting in the defensive zone. If you have the last change in the defensive zone, you know who you can match up with in the last 3 minutes when everything is out there, and you have to make the right decision to put the right players out there against the opposition. Having that last change when it really, really matters in the waning minutes and seconds of a game, that's what you have to do. That's what you do with home ice advantage.
Or at the very least, you own the decision, right?
Right.
You get a chance to own the decision to feel like you're in control of, okay, well, if I do this, I can live with it either way because I'm setting myself up for success. Whereas in Winnipeg, you know, if you're on the road and that happens, you're like, well, I'm going to put this line out and hope that's correct, and then you get the matchup you get. Whereas it's the other way around here. So, yeah, Bradford's absolutely right. This is it's really great how close Laviolette and – excuse me, close the Preds and the Jets are. And then this is, it's a game within a game, right? The
right.
Coaching is the game within the game. You got to score goals, you got to play defense, got to have good goaltending, all that. But it's the little things to set yourself up for success, and he's absolutely right. Chess match all the way.
He said I was right.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Very, very proud. Very proud that could happen right here. But look, to your point, Jeremy,
yes.
that has been probably I want to say one of the best subplots of this entire series is watching the coaching battle between Maurice and Laviolette. I mean, these are two guys that they've been around the block a few times. Peter Laviolette won a cup. After replacing Paul Maurice in Carolina, and then he gets replaced by Paul Maurice. And Maurice has taken a Winnipeg Jets team, which as a franchise, dating back to the Atlanta Thrashers, had never done anything in the postseason. They had never won a game.
Literally.
They had never won a series until this year. So that has been, you know, one of the best things to watch.
It has. But when do we usually see these ultimate chess matches, though, between coaches?
Yeah.
Stanley Cup final or the conference final? But yet, how the format has it, we're seeing it in the second round.
And let me just say this to all you people, including myself, that want to see the format changed. When you have a second round like we have had this year with these matchups, it's not going to change. they can look at it, but I don't think they're going to change it because these matchups have been tremendous.
Let me just say one thing about that. For those that are arguing about the format, if you change the format, you will just create another argument. The argument
right.
before was travel. Oh, the West Coast teams, they get screwed, blah, blah, blah. The Preds had that, 18,000-mile trip to go to seven against Anaheim, seven against San Jose, and then the big concern was, well, they just hit a wall. It's just too much travel.
Right.
Now the league takes care of that by having a Central Division bracket. It worked out that way. Central Division bracket and a Pacific Division bracket. Well, now we're complaining about the seeding. So it's one or the other, right? I mean, if you get rid of this and you solve that problem, you're going to create another one. That's just the bottom line.
You're right. But I still...
Oh.
Hey. Oh, hey, okay. You know, sorry. Live with it. Yeah. I'm glad I'm not sitting next to you tonight.
Are you, though? No, but, I think you're disappointed.
And no cuddles tonight.
Yeah.
No, but
all right, Marchand.
The thing is, too, with the way they're setting it up, remember, too, when we go back to when the Predators are facing the Red Wings all the time and they were just missing winning the division by a couple points.
Right.
And it knocked them down from a first to a fourth seed.
Right.
And you had that weird matchup in 06-07 with Preds and Sharks when it's supposed to be the year and then they lose in the first round. So no matter what, you're always going to find a beef and it's not going to be a perfect system. Still think there's tweaks because the wild card is what could mess up. You have the number one might have to go all the way out west, and yet they're the number one. If the wild card is Anaheim, San Jose, L.A., whatnot.
It's just how the cards are dealt.
It's how the cards are dealt. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. But to the point I want to make earlier, too, with Winnipeg and how they built, you have Kevin Cheveldayoff and what he's done with Winnipeg, too, and building the team similar to what the Predators are. Winnipeg struggled so much, and then they're having success right now because it's been a slow growth. But they've been growing it in the right way, the right fashion, whereas they never could do that in Atlanta. So they put in some better minds as well to try to build and getting the center depth, getting young talent on the blue line. You know, they made a lot of good decisions in terms of growth. That's what makes it such a great, intriguing series, too.
30 seconds left. Who wins tonight? Who has a 3-2 series lead going into Game 6?
Preds because they're at home.
Preds because they're home.
But
that's,
I'm not even going to pretend to be like 6-0 or 2-1 or triple overtime. I don't know anymore.
Whoa, hey, man, dude, you had to mention that?
I don't know anymore.
I heard
don't
maracas.
Know.
I heard maracas. It's Cinco de Mayo.
Total crap.
There
shoot.
You go. He is Jeremy K. Gober. You can listen to him tonight with Ryan Porth for Preds Extra following the game. For Justin B. Bradford, I am Chase McCabe. Thanks for joining me. 2.5 hours flew by.
Woo! Yeah, it did.
He had to go to the bullpen, though. don't forget that.
Stick around. We turn things over to Darren McFarland and the pregame show. That is next on ESPN 102.5 Game.